old, I like to like climb trees, be a ninja, pretend I'm animals, and all sorts of things. I like pretending I'm people from games. I like playing with my brother, and yeah, that's what I like to do. And oh yeah, I'm transgender.
That's from a video posted to YouTube in 2015 by Debbie Jackson, Avery's mom. The Jacksons live in Missouri, and this was just the beginning of their journey, sharing their experience with the world. Now, at 9 years old, Avery is the first transgender person in the whole world to have graced the cover of National Geographic. She wears pink hair, a pink t-shirt, pink leggings, and a serious expression. Right beside her is a quote. It says, "My favorite thing about being a girl is, now I don't have to pretend to be a boy." What does it mean to you just knowing that you are the first transgender person on the cover of this international magazine?
Well, that means a lot that I was chosen to be on the cover out of 9 9-year-olds in the whole world.
I know a lot of times the people on the opposite side of the issue from us want to say, oh, you're trying to normalize this, and that's horrible. We shouldn't be normalizing something like this. But the point is that it is normal, and we are normal, and Avery's normal, and our family life is normal. So we're not trying to normalize it. We're just trying to let other people understand that it already is a normal experience for many of us.
From a dot in the middle of the map, this is Midwesternish. I'm Gina Kaufman. Now, let's meet a family just trying to figure out what it means to be normal. Debbie Jackson started noticing that something was going on with Avery when she was just 3 years old.
Wanting to play with nightgowns, princess dresses, and be dressed as a girl more at home, she really started identifying with female characters in movies and books and things like that. So we just thought that that meant that we had a gay boy and had no idea that the internal sense of self could be mismatched from the body. A lot of people think that, you know, okay, she was a boy who liked more girl things. She liked the color pink. And we hear a lot of criticism of, oh, you were just too strict with gender roles. So she thought that if she liked girl things, that meant she had to be a girl. But the dysphoria goes so much further than that. It's being called the wrong name and pronouns and being called a daughter instead of a son. I mean, they understand the differences between being treated as a boy and a girl. And again, she has the physical dysphoria where she says her body is wrong, and she kept asking, if I die, do I get to come back again in the right body? And can I get these parts taken away because I don't like them? So there's that. That is what separates just being, you know, more effeminate and not understanding gender roles as much.
The American Psychiatric Association defines gender dysphoria as a difference between the gender assigned to a person at birth and gender as that person actually experiences or expresses it, coupled with significant distress or problems functioning. That last part about distress is really important.
At the age of 4, she started to get really depressed and she was acting out a lot. You know, a lot of behavior things like biting again and fighting in school, things that she had grown out of a couple of years earlier. But at bedtime, it was, why did God give me the wrong body? And I hate this. And can't I just be a girl? And, you know, she actually brought up the idea of having her parts cut off at the age of 4. And that was a really scary moment. And it really was when the physical dysphoria was being talked about so much more. And then she very directly told us, thankfully, Mom, you think that I'm a boy, but I'm a girl on the inside. And that was a big revelation to know that she really did feel this inside.
So once you had that information, what did you do as a parent?
After the initial panic, we called the pediatrician and went in to see the pediatrician. She said this is definitely not just normal childhood exploration, and we need to get you in with a psychologist. So she connected us with a child psychologist, and then we had a gender therapist that the family went to, and the gender therapist connected us with a child endocrinologist, a pediatric endocrinologist, and we went through the whole gamut of seeing a whole slew of professionals, and all of them together were able to come back with a diagnosis of gender dysphoria.
Were you ever uncertain about whether you were handling this in the right way, or were you just, because you had pulled in so many experts, fairly confident that this was the right choice?
Oh, we were uncertain for a long time. I mean, it's one of those things, you're not familiar with it and you keep thinking, are we really crazy? She's four. What if we get it wrong? What if she changes her mind? And then just when she could be acknowledged with the right pronouns and we would say that she was a beautiful little girl and things, she changed in her demeanor. The depression lifted. She started being much more outgoing and happy, and she was skipping around the house. And that was plenty of reassurance. And we thought, if this isn't a forever thing, that's okay. She's happy right now, and we'll just deal with tomorrow when it gets here.
The Jacksons were overjoyed to see Avery thriving in her identity as a girl, but not everyone embraced the change.
We did lose all our friends, so now I have new friends, but they're better.
When you say you lost all your friends, what happened?
Well, my friends didn't care I was transgender, but their parents really didn't like it. So, well, yeah.
You know, we had a really good group of friends. The parents kind of applauded us for being pretty progressive, because we are a more conservative family, and we were allowing her to wear, you know, the pink sparkly tennis shoes instead of the boy, you know, Lightning McQueen or Batman type of styled shoes. And you know, they thought that we were doing a really good thing by not restricting her to those gender norms. But once we had to announce to everyone, well, you might have noticed all these changes, and it's a little more than just breaking some of those gender rules. She's been diagnosed with gender dysphoria. We're going to let her socially transition, and we're going to start referring to her as a girl and letting her live as a girl. They didn't quite feel as progressive. Like, that was a leap too far, and they didn't know how to react. So I had left a little card with people to say, you know, here's some information. You can go to this website and you can learn about it, and I'd love to stay in touch. But unfortunately, no one offered to stay connected with us, and we just ended up pulling Avery from the preschool.
Losing all of your friends sounds awful, whether you're 3 or 30. But Avery is blasé.
Well, you're going to be getting hate. And
what kind of hate?
Well, just people saying things that you aren't going in the right bathroom, or just that's not who you are, when they have no idea. They're them, I'm me. So they technically have no choice to tell me who I am.
So the Jacksons posted that video on YouTube. And Debbie says they put themselves out there for a reason.
It was a way to find community. This isn't something that you just go and broadcast, you know, because you do know that there are going to be people out there. So you don't want to just organize meetups. You don't just pop out on social media, hey, I've got a trans kid. Does anyone else have one? And let's get together. So you stay hidden. At first, we were terrified to be public. I mean, we really kind of hid all of this for a couple of years, and then we started tiptoeing into talking about our story anonymously just because we felt so alone. In 2 years, we had never met another family with a trans child in person. But Avery was doing so well after a couple of years that we decided we've clearly done the right thing by her. There must be other families who are out there afraid as well. And that's why we started speaking out.
The video went viral, which put Avery in an online spotlight. But that was nothing compared to the publicity that came with that National Geographic cover. It's a pretty crazy thing to imagine experiencing at just 9 years old.
It was interesting to see myself there and on such a big magazine.
What did you know about National Geographic?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
But it seemed like a big deal.
Yeah.
Avery's story has gotten tons of support and tons of backlash. National advocacy groups have come out and said, "We stand with Avery." But there are also people who have disagreed, vocally, with the family's handling of the whole situation. And they've done it in really strong terms, as in accusations of child abuse.
We regret it every single day, but at the same time, we wouldn't have changed anything about the path that we've been on.
Avery, do you like it that people know so much about this part of your life?
Well, yes, because it is going to be helping other people, and it's going to be educating them and know, and it's good to let people know that, well, these kind of people exist and that they exist and you can't ignore them. So, and it's going to be showing a lot of people that it is a thing that if you have a trans kid, you should just let them be them. And being at the age of 9 years old and doing this is not the easiest thing ever, but it's also pretty easy, so.
You seem very confident. Do you hear that a lot from other people?
Sometimes, sometimes not.
Do you feel confident? Do you
Yeah.
feel like that's something that describes you?
Yes.
How do you find it in yourself to be brave when you encounter hate?
Sometimes I like hate, because hate can encourage you to do more things, like to just go and do it more, because then it's just going to be annoying the haters, and then it's going to be just good, because you're still doing good, because they can't do anything to me. Like, if they even try to do something, well, they'd probably go to jail for attacking a 9-year-old, because you're not really allowed to do that, so, or attack anyone, so, well, yeah, they can't do anything.
Debbie Jackson, hearing your daughter talk this way, what is it like?
It's a little bit inspiring to know that she understands that people are saying hateful things and that she gets some strength from that because she is so confident in who she is. But I also want to make sure that people understand she doesn't see most of the stuff that's out there. We do our best to protect her from it. So, you know, she understands that there are bathroom bills that come up. But for the most part, she doesn't see all the stuff that's on social media. She doesn't see the backlash or anything like that. So I don't want people out there thinking that she's reading and is aware of the extent of the comments.
You know, you've been described as an activist family. Do you see yourselves that way?
No, we don't. We just see ourselves as a normal, well, I would prefer that we were Southern, but I guess because of where we live, I have to put that aside. We are a Midwest family because that's where the kids were born. Well, I look at it the way that any parent that has an issue with their child, suddenly that becomes the all-consuming thing. So if one of my kids had developed a rare childhood cancer or something like that, that would have become my cause. And I would do everything I could to make sure that they were treated well in hospitals, that there was enough money and research put into things, that they were given trial medications. This to me is no different. My child happens to be transgender. Her physical body, the letter marker on her birth certificate, doesn't align with the life that she leads every day. And people want to write laws that would negatively impact her ability to live every day. So it's my job as a parent to speak out on her behalf and to make sure that she's given the same opportunities as everyone else.
Avery, is there anything that you wish was different about how society views transgender people?
Well, I wish they would actually treat them as a normal human and, like, they actually exist and they're not just, and they're like you. Because, like, they should think about this, it this way. You're being mean to them and giving them hate. But what if you were put in that situation? Like, what if you were the one in that situation and you were the one getting hate and getting bullied? How would you want to change it, would you? Yes, you would, because you wouldn't like that. So, nobody ever thinks about that before they just go ahead and become keyboard warriors and just go, just type every hate thing they can get.
What do you think are some of the biggest differences between being a girl and being a boy?
Well, not really anything.
As adults, we can forget how hard it can be to be a kid. But growing up as a transgender girl in the Midwest with a national audience, that is a huge responsibility in a way. Avery's learned to deal with true hatred at 9 years old. Everything takes a toll. A few months after we first spoke with the Jacksons, we followed up with them at their home. Tom, Avery's father, is a chiropractor. He's lost half his patients since they went public.
It's gotten worse. I think it's gotten worse because of the political climate that we find ourselves in now. This has changed me in ways I would never have imagined. And even to the point when we're out in public, I literally look 10 feet in every direction. And we've been out in public before where someone will walk up to us and say, I know who you are. And then you have that moment of panic and fear. And they're like, I absolutely love you guys. You're great.
As for Avery, well, it's not actually the hatred that's driving her crazy. It's us. It's you and me. All these questions, the attention. Avery just wants to be Avery.
My mom told me you were just going to come and stop and say hi and talk to her. And this is the thing they always do. It's like I'm the one that always gets the question asked. I mean, I'm not interesting. I'm just a boring person that sits at a computer animating and making games and playing games all day. That's really all I ever do.
This episode of Midwesternish was produced by Matt Hodep and Matthew Long Middleton. Sylvia Maria Gross is our editor. Special thanks to KCUR reporter Laura Ziegler. You can subscribe to this podcast on NPR One or wherever else you generally like to do that kind of thing. If you're liking Midwesternish and you want to hear more stories from our little crew, you can check out Central Standard. That's a daily talk show that I host on Kansas City's public radio station, KCUR 89.3. Head to kcur.org to give it a listen. I'm Gina Kaufman. Catch you next time.